This is a story about a bull, so it has to happen. The summer afternoon, the child, hot and tired, taking a shortcut through the woods. Nothing to it, really, just a twitch of that hump, a flick of that head, and then a little heap of child in the grass. Then the long night of dread and fear with the doctor padding in and out of the dark room pronouncing that terrible word, coma. In the morning, though, just before dawn, the child opened his eyes, stirred under the sheets, and asked for a drink of water. Dread turned into joy and fear turned into rage, and at first light, the father took his gun and marched himself across the fields to the woods pasture. There was nothing to it, really, just the crack of a rifle shot and a thud, and then a great heap of bull in the dewy grass. Miss Wigglesworth, a dim, fluttering presence at the edge of it all, was not even consulted. By afternoon, the child was up, looking precious and frail and being made much of. The story was told over and over to friends and relatives who would pinch his cheeks and ruffle his hair and gasp and smack and say, "Bless his heart," while in the backyard, chunks of Miss Wigglesworth's bull bobbed and simmered in a vat over a fire and slowly melted off the bones. In the evening, buckets of cornmeal were stirred into the slurry with long ash paddles and a handful of salt was thrown in, and the whole mess was dipped out and packed into lard cans as dog food. It was the very next day that the men drove up in Miss Hamilton's Graham Page. The manager of her little dairy herd, a Mr. Sharpless from Philadelphia, and a representative from the American Jersey Cattle Club. They stood around in the front yard in their dark, foreign-looking clothes until the father showed them into his office. For a long time, there was just a lot of talk about the dairy business and Jersey cows, importation records, and the herd improvement registry. Then the talk turned specifically to Miss Hamilton's little dairy herd. Testing procedures for measuring and recording butterfat production had been pioneered there, and it had been discovered that cows in Miss Wigglesworth's bull's breeding line were amazingly productive. So productive, in fact, that for breeding purposes, Miss Wigglesworth's bull was, well, in short, they were interested, if the father would consider, and since he was not a dairyman himself. "But you see," said the father, "we are very interested in acquiring this animal, sir," said Mr. Sharpless from Philadelphia. "Maybe you don't realize the importance of," said the representative of the American Jersey Cattle Club, and there was a lengthy explanation of the Babcock butterfat test. "But," the father said, "sir," said the manager of Miss Hamilton's dairy, "Miss Hamilton is prepared to pay a considerable sum." "But you must not know what has happened here," said the father. "That bull—" "A small fortune, in fact, sir," said Mr. Sharpless from Philadelphia. "Damn Yankees," said the mother at the supper table that night, gripping her knife and fork in tight fists, "coming into our house with their talk of small fortunes." She beamed across the table at her son, seated on a chair with a tasseled cushion like a little prince who still managed a limp when he remembered. "But," Miss Wigglesworth started up in a quavering voice, "the bull, the small fortune—" "Miss Wigglesworth," the mother said in a withering tone, "this has nothing to do with you." And she swept down on her son with kisses, saying, "No Yankee's small fortune can pay for my child's life." It was much later that someone, maybe a maid or a gardener, missed Miss Wigglesworth. "She's moping over that animal," snapped the mother, and someone was sent to the woods pasture to find her. They looked in the garden, they looked in the barn. Finally, someone thought to check Miss Wigglesworth's room. Her clothes, her Bible and book of inspirational verses, her plaster statue of the Three Graces, and her trunk, all were gone. There was not even a sliver of soap on the washhand stand. "Without so much as a by your leave," snapped the mother, remembering the other melodramatic scenes of departure. The buttoned-up cloak, the strapped-up trunk, and then the sniveling and the tears. You watch. She'll be back with her tail between her legs. But Miss Wigglesworth did not come back with her tail between her legs. In fact, Miss Wigglesworth was never seen or heard from again. And as it turned out, the accident with the bull was just the first of a series of misfortunes the family suffered during the next year. Pine beetles spread from one lightning-struck tree throughout a vast tract of old longleaf pines, and they all had to be cut and sold as salvage. Then there was a wet winter and rain rushing down the bare slope where the woods had been eroded gullies through the fields, and all the topsoil ended up in a muddy flat down at the river. And then, early one morning, the house burned to the ground. No one was hurt, and they managed to save a few pieces of furniture, but it was a fine old house, built in the 1830s out of heart pine, and it made a spectacular fire. The father's pride went with the house, and he sold his ruined land to a paper company and got a job at Miss Hamilton's thriving dairy as a pasture man, where he became quite respected among agronomists for improving grazing by intercropping grasses with velvet bean. But the mother was never comfortable in her new small life in the rented cottage at the dairy. Her greatest pleasure was in telling and retelling her bored neighbors about the grand life she'd led when she had been mistress of a plantation and had had servants and a governess for the children. A Miss Wigglesworth, tiresome woman, always giving herself airs. The neighbor's eyes would flicker and he would lean forward with his hands on his knees and say, "Well," but by then the mother would have come to the accident with the bull. "My son not expected to live through the night, but by a miracle," and the neighbor would settle back down knowing there would be no escape now until after the house burned to the ground. Burned to the ground, one of the finest houses in the county, all heart pine. And the neighbor would stretch and begin to rise. "Well, it's been real nice, and give your husband my regards." Such a coincidence, the fire exactly a year and a day after the accident. And knowing the rest by heart, the neighbor would prompt, "It must have been something in the..." There we stood at first light, our feet wet with dew, watching our ancestral home go up in flames. The cause of the fire was never determined, the mother would conclude all in her own time. "It must have been something in the wiring." And that, at last, was the end of the story.
Bailey White lives in South Georgia and comes to us by way of member station WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida.